Welcome to Registry Matters, an independent production. Our opinions are our own, not influenced by anyone else. We are thankful for the support of our patrons. You make what we do here possible. We couldn't do this without you. And always remember, FYP.
Recording live from FYP Studios East and West, transmitting across the internet. This is episode 369 of Registry Matters. Larry, good sir, how are you this evening?
Doing awesome. Why are we here on Friday?
Because you've got some shenanigans in your office that you can't get out of, so we had to kick it a day.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be funny if she doesn't show up.
Right? Totally, yeah. Totally.
Yeah, it's getting the financials ready for the tax season, and this person used to be a full-time accountant. Now she teaches accounting, and I can barely beg her to come in here, and I have to pay her an astronomical amount of money. And she ghosted me last time. Hopefully she doesn't do it tomorrow.
Well, let's hope so. So that would just be, well, that would be a tragedy, Larry.
Well, I have an idea. Well, if she doesn't show up, we can record this again tomorrow.
We could record next week's tomorrow, and then we could have off next week.
I see. All right.
Well, please remember to show your support by hitting like, subscribe, make a 5-star review in your podcast app. It helps us out a lot. I don't know if you hear this on all of the other podcast apps. You don't ever listen to any podcast, Larry, do you?
No, I do not.
This is really a tragedy. But and then also if you're feeling generous, as we have a whole score of people in here tonight that are patrons. And you can do that over at patreon.com/registrymatters. And even for as little as a buck a month, it shows your support and helps us be inspired to do this week in and week out. What are we doing this evening?
Well, we're going to have a lot of fun.
Okay. Are we done yet?
We have a case from the appellate division, Court of New Jersey, and that's a win for PFRs, at least for now. Also, we plan to have a discussion about a bill that just passed in Wyoming creating the new offense of grooming. And of course, it's a felony.
Bizarre.
And similar proposals are pending in many states across the country. And also, we have a little blurb about a PFR running for city council in Fresno, California, which is causing major panic.
Well, all right then. Let's start here. This is from Fox 26 News. And, this story, there's actually more than just some chatter in the PFR community. It's from Fresno, California, and the Fresno city leader spoke out Thursday at City Hall over the candidacy of Renee Campos, a registered PFR running for Fresno City Council District 7. Now, it's come to my attention, and it even hit national news, that we have a registered PFR that is currently running for Fresno City Council. While I suspect anybody's ability to serve our community, I respect anybody's ability to serve our community. I find this quite disturbing, said Councilmember Annalisa Pereira.
Yes, I would agree with her. I would be very disturbed if somebody like that was running. But anyway.
Aren't you already disturbed enough, man?
So, Campos's candidacy has sparked controversy within the public eye. Council members say they are considering legislation aimed at preventing registered PFRs from holding public office. Now, I'm going to quote Perea again. I think if you want to be an effective council member, you need to at least be able to go to school campuses. I would like to know I can bring my children into city council, said Councilor Perea. Now, that's funny. Why would a PFR, what would a PFR be able to do serving council chambers that would endanger children? I mean, I've been to council meetings through the years, and I'm trying to imagine how you would do any PFRing at a public meeting.
So you don't know this, that PFRs, they just spontaneously, like, they reoffend just because they exist? Are you not familiar with this condition?
Well, I'm trying to visualize it. So they're on the dais, and there's 20 minors in the room, which there's never any minors, but let's just say there are. What would this look like? I'm going to do like Emily Horowitz, trying to explain how you grab a child and run out of a store with them or out of a shopping mall. What would this look like? So the counselor sees a teen that's sitting in the audience watching a boring city council meeting, And this counselor, since it's a male, he's wanting to perv on the teen. How would this go down?
Everything about it would be wrong, because the person, any legislation, any, you know, whatever little resolutions that they're trying to pass there in the council is going to be slanted in a way that PFRs can do more PFRing. That the whole agenda of the PFR is going to be flawed because of it.
I see. All right.
Because, you know, capitalists don't have ulterior motives. People that have finances invested with pharmaceuticals when they're voting on a pharmaceutical drug, like, you know, whatever. Anyway, so anyway, Counselor Pereira added that she is working with colleagues on legislation to block Campos from running.
Yes, well, as we said, Rene Campos is a registered PFR, and he's running for District 7. But also Councilman Miguel Arias echoed concerns about the safety of children and families in civic spaces. Arias said, any given Tuesday, we have kids in this room. We have families. And the last thing I want to be concerned about is whether there's a registered sex offender in these chambers.
So then Robin, the National Association for Rational PFR Laws, said individuals who have completed their sentences should have full constitutional rights, including the ability to run for office. Robin Vanderwall, NARSAL's board chair, said even if they don't like folks who are on the registry, at least they have to deal with the fact that these are also human beings. They're entitled to dignity. They're entitled to their rights as American citizens. And if they've completed all their obligations that were put in front of them as a consequence of their crime, they ought to be allowed to rejoin society fully. And that's what Robin Vanderwall, the organization's board chair, said. And Robin Vanderwall then emphasized that the ultimate decision should rest with voters.
Yes, I tend to agree with Mr. Vanderwall, but it's kind of ironic. Now, this is coming from the left coast. Now, Fresno is a fairly purple area. It's not flaming liberal, but it's not arch conservative either, from what I think I know. And it's kind of ironic that we're hearing the same type of stuff from the liberal side of the aisle, which I dealt with in this last legislative session. I fought the liberals more than I did the conservatives on bad stuff here. But anyway, that's the irony of this.
Oh, and I did want to point out that one of our patrons said that he donated money to the guy's campaign, which I find to be hilarious.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I
wonder if it was stimulus check money level.
I'm hoping it's at least that, and the final stimulus for that matter. But I think the guy has virtually no chance. Looking at the interview, we didn't run the clip because it was going to take 5 minutes of time. But there was a story that you can dig into on the link. And he has all the mannerisms that would cause you to for your skin. It's kind of like the fingernails on the old chalkboards we used to have.
Yes.
Yeah. Listen to this guy talk. It's the stereotypical what you would expect.
I gotcha. Well, just on that little chalkboard comment, I asked my kid if he's ever seen one before. And he's like, yeah, I think when I was like in first grade, they had chalkboards. Okay. Moving along then. So a bill aimed at making explicit grooming of children. I like explicit grooming. We're going to have to figure that one out. So the explicit grooming of children illegal is headed to Governor Mark Gordon's desk for final approval after passing the House and the Senate. House Bill number 9, this is from Wyoming, Grooming of Children Offenses and Amendments, aims to make sexual grooming of minors a felony offense. Similar legislation is pending in other states. Now, come on, dude. Tell me, what is grooming?
Well, I'm not clear, so I decided to defer to the experts. According to the National Office for Child Safety, grooming is the deliberate process an abuser uses to build a relationship, trust, and emotional connection with a child for the purpose of sexual abuse or exploitation. The manipulative process often involves behaviors that individually may seem harmless, but collectively lower a victim's inhibitions, isolate them from support systems, and ensure silence. So I guess it would be similar to the preteen boys that live in my neighborhood that I think are potentially going to go down the dark road of getting in trouble with the law. and I try my best to be friends with them because I don't want them doing naughty things to my house or to me. And I try to extend an olive branch of friendship and be polite to them. So I suppose that might even qualify as grooming as one option.
Like chatting online then?
Well, I would imagine that could be consumed. Yes, grooming can occur in person or online, I'm told. But the bill defines grooming as deliberate acts that establish an emotional connection with a minor through manipulation, trust building, or influence to facilitate acts of sexual conduct or sexual abuse or exploitation, which is usually photographs. So like if you, I guess if I'm a friend with these preteens and I've got the long range view, I would say, well, now this one's got kind of an athletic build and it's going to grow. He's going to grow up to be really nice. So I'm going to get in his good side so that when he gets to be a teenager, I can get him to send pictures. I guess that's what this would be like. But see, this is one of the many problems with the bill. This is all thought police, but go ahead.
Yeah, I got you that it's all thought police. All this stuff starts making me think that we need to watch Minority Report as one of the movies that we watch. So. All right. Well, then the article points out that there is currently no Wyoming law addressing grooming before physical crime occurs. Does this exist other places, though, for real?
Not yet, to my knowledge, but it is a bill that's being pushed. And I agree that there's no law and there shouldn't be, in my opinion. This is a slippery slope we're heading down. This means potentially any act of kindness by an adult could be prosecuted as grooming if we're not careful.
Yeah, no doubt. The proponents argue that grooming often precedes exploitation, but is not directly prosecutable, leading to reliance on downstream charges. Lawmaker Representative Lori Bratton, Republican in Sheridan County, I guess it would be. Bratton said the bill would allow charging based on patterns, potentially preventing escalation to physical sexual harms. This is to save the children prior to physical sexual harms being committed. That's bizarre.
Yes, but it's one of those things where we are having to guess what people do. And my position is that the laws are already sufficient. Wyoming's existing laws, and Wyoming Statute 6-4-03 on child exploitation is already against the law, and Wyoming Statute 6-2-316 on enticement. They address completed acts or pornography. I mean, if you solicit a minor, it's against the law to proposition a minor below a certain age. And I remember in Wyoming, it's 14 or 16, but there's an age limit. But these do not specifically cover grooming behavior, such as online manipulation. Current law allows prosecutors to charge parts of grooming, including solicitation of a child, under 14, and sending obscene material to a minor, or sexual abuse when and if contact occurs. But there's no standalone crime addressing the pattern of manipulation and trust building that comes first. Again, how do we know why they're building the trust? I'm trying to build trust so that I don't get my house trashed or my throat slashed. But House Bill 9 would create a specific grooming offense covering online or in-person conduct, even if no meeting occurs. That's according to Executive Director Terry Markham of Uprising as an organization.
I got a question for you, though. Isn't advertising building trust and manipulating you to go buy their product?
Of course it is.
Okay. So did you say that the Uprising Executive Directory, Terry Markham, what is Uprising?
I was afraid you might ask me that, so I did the research. They are a 501c3 in Wyoming.
And what do they do?
According to their website, using Uprising exists to empower communities, volunteers, and donors to confront human trafficking and exploitation through awareness, education, and outreach. And by the way, we also checked their 990 tax return. They haven't filed one since 2023 that I can locate, but they're doing they're doing pretty well with what I did find. They've got some money and they're bringing in money.
So they haven't filed in 2 years. Does that mean anything, or just that it's not publicly available?
It doesn't necessarily mean they haven't filed it, because they could be running a fiscal year that ends in June or any time during the month, during the year, any month during the year. And then they could have filed for an extension, which is automatic. So it could be that they just haven't filed because of the way the calendar has fallen. But 2023 is the last one I could find.
And, well, then what does the bill do? The bill makes grooming a felony punishable by imprisonment for up to 5 years and a fine of up to $10,000. The bill increases prison time and fines if the victim is younger than 16 years of age or is in a position of authority, and increases more for if the victim is younger than 12 years of age.
And keep going. Somebody screwed this script up.
God, and he just checked it too. So according to Uprising's executive director, it also closes the gap on sex offender registry issues, such as people who committed offenses in other states and move here. Oh, the horror. And don't have to register, but try to get jobs working with children. She also said grooming process is complex, but there are warning signs, like to explain grooming as a process, a series of tactics someone uses to prepare another person to eventually be exploited. It often looks like a connection or a new relationship. Most often, it may start with a youth searching for connection. We often see a trust-building period where the predator uses love bombing, giving the youth time, praise, and attention to build trust. They will often try to learn a lot about the youth. This is where I see the biggest opportunity to notice red flags as a parent, another adult, or peer. This part of grooming often looks like a new relationship phase.
Love bombing? I don't think I've heard that before.
You could imagine what it would be, but yeah, I don't think I've heard it either.
So, well, now here's when over the last 9 years, I've talked about the law enforcement victim apparatus, where they come together. This is what I mean by that. Captain Rigney, the article spelled it differently, but I'm going with Rigney, said current law enforcement can alert parents of a potential victim, but cannot arrest someone solely for grooming behavior. House Bill 9 would give us more formal tools. The Sheridan Police Department welcomes new tools that allow us to protect children and intervene as early as possible, definitely before it becomes a full-fledged act of exploitation or sexual abuse. We're not going to ignore behavior and let it carry on until it's a crime. Isn't that sweet? We're just going to go ahead and arrest people for something that they might do, but they haven't done it. Now, remember, though, this is a conservative state that watches the purse so carefully, and they don't waste a penny of resources. And their philosophy is every time you pass a new law, you should repeal 5 or 10. You've heard that, right?
Yeah, I recall this.
Yes.
Too many laws already.
I'd like to see what laws Bratton is proposing to be repealed.
I bet you none. That would be my guess, is that they are proposing none. Sponsor Bratton said, by creating a standalone felony offense focused on the preparatory manipulation itself, the bill equips law enforcement and courts to stop predators sooner, protect vulnerable children more effectively, and reduce the escalation seen in recent Wyoming cases involving online enticement and sextortion.
And I didn't have a comment planned for that, but I want to make one. The funny thing about this increasing frequency of what they're talking about is only because you create the problem yourself by devoting all the manpower that you say you're so short on, and that you say that you don't have enough resources, by doing these big sting operations and morphing into a minor with people who think they're in an adult chat room. And then you say there's a surge in a very crime that you've created that doesn't really exist in the real world. Now, can you please agree with me that that's funny?
It is not funny, Larry. It's a shame. It is not funny.
Are you a first-time listener of Registry Matters? Well, then make us a part of your daily routine and subscribe today. Just search for Registry Matters through your favorite podcast app, hit the subscribe button, and you're off to the races. You can now enjoy hours of sarcasm and snark from Andy and Larry on a weekly basis. Oh, and there's some excellent information thrown in there too. Subscribing also encourages others of you people to get on the bandwagon and become regular Registry Matters listeners. So what are you waiting for? Subscribe to Registry Matters right now. Help us keep fighting and continue to say FYP.
Well, let's head over to Joyzy. And so there's this case that like I said, is from New Jersey. And it's a consolidated appeal decision by the appellate division. And this is from the February 23rd, so just a couple weeks ago. Can you clarify what the appellate division is for the audience?
Sure. It's the Intermediate Court of Appeals directly under the state Supreme Court. So remember, the state Supreme Courts, they sit in unison as one body. And the mid-level court has, in this case, 32 judges. But they review decisions of the trial courts, the tax court, and the municipal courts. And in New Jersey, it consists of 32 judges. And they split off in three-judge panels. And that provides, when you divide that, that's at least 10 panels, right? If you divide three into 32. So you have tenfold capacity to put through appeals. And basically, almost everyone has a right to take something up to one level, one layer of appellate review. So that's what this particular court does in New Jersey.
The issue of this case is whether their out-of-state convictions are substantially similar to offenses that trigger a duty to register in Jersey. Now, how's that?
Well, you're doing great, I can tell. When did you read this case, anyway?
Oh, I was reading it while I was coding with Claude Code all day.
So, well, you're doing great, so keep going.
All right, well, the names of the appellants are Norman Milner and Shaquan Gregg. Now, tell us what the issue is here, please.
In these appeals, the court considered for the first time the state's statutory duty to find that an out-of-state sex offender's crime is similar to a New Jersey Megan's Law offense before charging that person with failing to register in New Jersey.
Now, I noticed that in both cases, neither of them informed their home state that they were relocating to New Jersey?
That is correct, and that's funny. I know you're going to admit that that one's funny.
That is not, that's going to get them all kinds of messed up, isn't it?
Well, it did.
So they were, one was convicted, they were both convicted of sexual offenses in South Carolina and New York, and they were both required to register in those states. Both then independently moved to New Jersey without informing their supervising authorities in South Carolina or New York. Now, how did Jersey become aware of their presence? I'm guessing it was the hovercraft watching them?
No, it was not the hovercraft watching them.
Tracking chips in their arms? I guess the neighbors narked on them.
No, but those are things that could happen, particularly the tracking chips. I know when you're in the PFR office, they inject you with a tracking chip, right? A chip in your arm, right?
Yes, of course they do.
But they were each arrested on separate and unrelated charges, which this decision left out the details. In each instance, police discovered there were out-of-state PFRs who had failed to register in New Jersey because they got arrested. So, folks, no hovercraft. No tracking software. All this came about because they had other contact with law enforcement. But after
which
that,
which is why I drive like 5 miles an hour below the speed limit. I'm telling you, don't tail end anybody. I'm telling you, that's another thing. Don't tailgate. All right, yes. Please continue. Sorry for interrupting.
So, but as a result of whatever it was they did, they were charged with, after it was discovered, violating the statute. And it's extremely unlikely that the hovercraft or any hovercraft will ever be your downfall in this scenario.
And then in 2024, separate grand juries indicted Milner for failure to register in the third degree and Gregg for failure to notify police of an address change. So what happened next?
Well, they weren't excited about this at that point, and each defendant moved to dismiss the indictments.
So weird.
They argued that the state failed to conduct the threshold legal analysis required under the New Jersey statutes annotated 2C7-2 subsection B3 to determine whether the sexual offenses were similar to a New Jersey Megan's Law offense. Both defendants contended that the analysis was a necessary condition precedent to their obligation to register in New Jersey. The trial court rejected their motions, their arguments, and denied their motions. And then the court granted leave to appeal, and Milner, in the meantime, pled guilty to the lesser charge of obstructing the administration of law or in the other governmental function, and the court sentenced him to time already served and fines. After Gregg appealed, the court listed the matters back to back and consolidated this and making it a joint appeal because it was the same, same issue in play about whether they got their determination made that it was supposed to be made.
Now, this is super interesting for the audience because many people move from state to state. Before we go into the nuts and bolts of their reasoning, what did the court decide?
Well, then everybody's going to tune out if we tell them that. They held that out-of-state PFR's requirement to register in the state where they have been convicted does not, by operation of law, eliminate the legislature's clear due process mandate, and that statute already read. That mandate requires the state to find that an out-of-state sex offender's crime is similar to a New Jersey Megan's Law offense prior to charging that out-of-state offender with failure to register in New Jersey.
This sounds like a win.
It is for the moment.
Say that again, because you're Mr. Doom and Gloom, and you never say those words.
Okay, well, it is for the moment. They have won, but I expect this win will only be temporary.
What determines if a person with an out-of-state conviction is required to register in Jersey?
Well, rather than saying all those numbers, New Jersey statute annotated addresses the registration of sex offenders. It defines sex offenses and sets forth the requirements for PFRs, including offenders who committed their crimes in another state. And the appropriate section of law states, a person who has been convicted, adjudicated delinquent, which includes juveniles, or found not guilty by reason of insanity for commission of a sex offense, as defined in subsection B of this section, shall register as provided in subsections C and D of this section.
Now, does New Jersey have a long list of registrable offenses?
It's not particularly long, and I got this directly from the court decision rather than doing the research. According to the court, sex offenses recognized include, but are not limited to, and this is what it says, not limited to. It always scares me because it tells me that maybe a judge can say, well, you got to register for this, even though it's not on a list. But not limited to aggravated sexual assault, aggravated criminal sexual conduct, kidnapping a victim younger than 16 years of age. That dice you get to be on the PFR registry for kidnapping, endangering the welfare of a child by engaging in sexual conduct, luring and enticing, false imprisonment of a minor. So if you rob the liquor store and the mother has her kid there and you throw the kid in the cooler and put the padlock on it, I guess you have to register. Knowingly promoting prostitution of a child or attempt to commit any of the previous enumerated offenses.
There's this great movie that's out these days. It's called Roof Man. And the guy would go into, he would break in, he would beat the crap out of the roof and break open the roof. And that's how he would get through locked doors and all that stuff. And he would go break into fast food restaurants and the morning shift. And you know, the kids work in there. So in this case, he would then lock them in the freezer or whatever, or the fridge, and then make away with the money. So he would end up being on the registry.
Sounds like where he should be, robbing places.
I know, right? We mostly left the audience hanging in the terms of the challengers. Let me read directly from the decision. And it says, on November 13th, 2023, the Union City Police Department arrested Greg on charges unrelated to the appeal. During processing, the UCPD discovered that he had an outstanding South Carolina warrant for failure to register as a PFR in that state. The UCPD contacted South Carolina authorities and learned that Greg was classified there as a Tier 2 PFR. And then on June 14th, 2023, I don't know how to pronounce this, S-E-C-A-U-C-U-S.
I would think it's Secaucus.
Okay, Secaucus. The Secaucus Police Department arrested Milner on an outstanding warrant for an unrelated charge arising out of Jersey City. And the SPD transported Milner to the Jersey City Police Department, and then during processing, the JCPD learned that Milner was a registered PFR in New York. Thereafter, the JCPD charged Milner with failure to register in New Jersey.
So, well, I elected not to put the graphic details of their PFR offenses because one of them was particularly graphic, more than our family audits can handle. But I told you it wasn't the hovercraft. It wasn't a hovercraft that got them caught. If you're going to not register, let me give you a little bit of Larry's general rules. Don't have contact with the police in any way, shape, or form if you're not going to comply with registration, because they will run you through the NCIC when they have contact with you. In most instances, as a matter of standard operating procedure, and they'll check their registry and you won't be on it. And then you'll have a real problem. So if you're on the run from registration, don't have contact with police. Don't beat anyone up in a bar. Don't drive your car with music blaring really loud, with it thumping, waking up the people at midnight. You know, don't become rolling probable cause.
And I mean, the things that you've just described are even more along the lines of like misdemeanor kind of things, but that still puts you on their radar and they're going to run you, and then they're going to find things that you probably don't want them to find.
Yes, and I don't understand how this keeps happening. I mean, we had the case some years ago of the guy from Nebraska that moved to Nebraska from Colorado and got into the barroom brawl. He'd be still living in Nebraska today unregistered if he hadn't done that.
Yeah. All right. So let's see here. So, all right. On January 17th, 2024, the JCPD officer Anna Licia Vega testified before the grand jury. Through her investigation, she learned that Milner was registered in New York due to a 2003 conviction for having a relationship with a 16-year-old female when he was 33 years old. Vega also testified that Milner told police he moved from New York to New Jersey in April of 2023 without reporting his move to New York authorities.
Well, that in itself is disgusting to think that a 16-year-old and a 33-year-old would be having sex. I mean, can you imagine something? There should be a law against that. Let's talk to the people in Wyoming about that, or the legislators there.
I see what you did there.
It should be unlawful for anybody to have sex with anyone more than 4 years older than younger than them. Don't you agree?
Would that make the president and his wife not doing proper things?
Yes, but
isn't he like 20 years older than her?
But that's different.
Oh, that's different because it's him?
That's correct. But in the case of Milner, I would say that he probably should have declined their interview request.
You think? Yes, he probably should have. All right. The grand jury indicted Milner on one count of failure to register. Milner moved to dismiss the indictment, contending that he was unaware he had to register in New Jersey. Does it matter that he said he did not know he was required to register?
Well, first of all, I don't really believe him, but nevertheless, the trial. I mean, if you've been registered 15, 20, or 30, or 40 years, to say that you don't know you have to register, I think is ridiculous. Nonetheless, the trial court determined that the statute does not expressly include a culpable mental state. The trial court next found that Milner's failure to register was knowing. Supporting that finding was Milner's awareness of his obligation to register in New York and an obligation he'd had for 20 years. Well, they would have been able to prove that he had been registered for 20 years, but they wouldn't have been able to prove much of the comments I'm sure he made in the interview if he'd kept his mouth shut. So, folks, don't talk to the police.
No shit. All right. So, but, you know, seriously, I'm confused. We mentioned already that the out-of-state conviction must be substantially similar to a New Jersey registrable offense. How did the trial court handle that part?
Well, the trial court interpreted the statute to not require a notice of the state's similar to requirement or determination hearing to challenge it. The trial court ultimately denied the motion, determined that the state met its burden of proof before the grand jury. Basically, the trial court said, well, I am not going to undo what the citizens of the grand jury did. And I would imagine if I were a judge, here's my thinking, and I bet this judge did the same thing. I would have thought, well, gee, if you really wanted your due process, you should have presented yourself to New Jersey authorities. Now you're crying about the lack of due process that you didn't get, but yet you tried to live under the radar. So I would just about bet, if I can think of that, the trial judge thought of that also and said, to hell with you. You should have presented yourself, and then you could have expected due process.
Milner then pled guilty to the lesser charge of obstructing administration of law or other governmental function. The court sentenced him to time served, and he then appealed. If they sentenced him to time served, why would he appeal? So I'm confused about that.
As am I. I'm confused for a different reason, because normally when you do a plea, unless you specifically preserve an appellate option, appeal is foreclosed unless the judge sentences outside the contours of the agreement or outside the statutory limits. So unless the plea agreement provided that he could appeal the issue of his duty to register, I don't see how he managed to do the appeal. But anyway, he did.
All right. Well, then Section B3 addresses the procedure for potential registration of individuals who are registered in other states and have since relocated to New Jersey. Remind us what that section says.
Well, according to the court, a plain reading of subsection B3 shows that for a state to determine an out-of-state sex offender must register in New Jersey, it must find that this out-of-state offense is similar to a sexual offense under New Jersey's law. And that's what these guys hung their hat on. They said the double determination was made.
And how was it determined if an offense is similar?
Well, the court noted that the statute does not define the phrase similar to. They went on to say, we have held, and this is the appellate court, the out-of-state conviction requires registration in Jersey so long as the conviction being compared to a Megan's Law enumerated offense contains the same essential elements and the underlying purposes of the crimes are consonant. And that's not in my vocabulary, but I think it means identical to or an agreement with. Right. I think is what that means.
Yeah, because I don't know that in all of the 300 whatever episodes I've ever heard us use the word consonant in this kind of context. So what does that mean?
I'm not sure, but I think it means in agreement with. It probably goes back to old archaic English, and some of our vast studio audience can Google that, but I've not ever used that word before or seen it in a legal decision.
I'm thinking that the opposite of consonant is dissonant, and that would be like a musical term. I think that seems like a stretch. But yeah. What you're saying is in agreement with. All right. Well, I am still a bit confused. These two failed to register in New Jersey, and now they are claiming that they did not receive due process to determine if their out-of-state convictions are similar. How could they receive due process if they never presented themselves and registered in New Jersey? And Larry, I'll add to that, the only reason they didn't go register is because they were like, quote unquote, hiding, whatever. They were like, screw this, I'm done, and moved. So they didn't have to register anymore. And now they're pissed off that they caught up with them.
That's a good question. The appellate court could not find any inconsistency, however. They stated, we have also held that an out-of-state sex offender is entitled to notice an opportunity to challenge a New Jersey Megan's Law obligation by filing a motion with the judge. The motion triggers a summary hearing wherein the judge addresses the legal question of whether the out-of-state conviction is similar to a qualifying conviction under Megan's Law. Apparently, they should have done it after they were arrested for failure to register in New Jersey. but I would have been a little bit irritated, too, if all of a sudden, after hiding for however long they were hiding, went a warrant out for him in South Carolina. I'd have been a little irritated too if I were the judge. I mean, you're only human.
It's true. They were, the one guy was there since 23, I think, so he's only been there for a couple of years. Based on my reading of this decision, it's clear that the trial court had an opportunity to make that determination. The trial court determined that Greg's South Carolina obligation to register for his PFR crime in that state created an obligation as a matter of law to register in New Jersey. The trial court further concluded that the assistant prosecutor did not have to conduct a similar to analysis under New Jersey. Oh God, what did you say it is? New Jersey something annotated?
Statutes annotated.
Statutes. So what did the appellate court decide on that?
They said, we disagree. They say that section that I don't want to read does not negate the state's obligation to conduct the similar to analysis based on whether a defendant was required to register or not in another state. The trial court's narrow reading of subsection C3 disregards this step. The legislature expressly required the state to determine that an out-of-state sex offender's crimes are similar to a New Jersey Megan's Law offense before the out-of-state offender can be charged with violating New Jersey law. Quote, we conclude the trial court's denial of Greg's motion to dismiss the indictment was an error. In Milner, the trial court found that the state did not conduct a statutory analysis, but nevertheless decided Milner was required to register as a PFR in New Jersey based solely on his previous registration obligation in New York.
Well, as we get closer to wrapping this up, the question as the appellate court sees it is, can the state bypass its legislatively imposed duty to make a similar to determination for an out-of-state offender when that offender fails to seek proper authorization to leave their home state and secure permission to come to New Jersey? So if we put that another way, does the less than diligent out-of-state offender who fails to seek proper authorization to leave their home state and secure permission to come to New Jersey waive their right to challenge a similar to determination before being charged here? And how do they answer that?
They held, in keeping with our reasoning above, we conclude the answer is no. The states bound by the requirements of New Jersey law cannot ignore this duty to perform a similar to analysis even for those offenders who fail to follow proper registration procedure to enter the state. It is clear that the state must complete the analysis to establish an out-of-state offender's obligation in Jersey prior to indictment, regardless of the circumstances under which the individual is detected. Now, I don't know if you realize how funny this is, but basically, you've got a license now, if this holds, to move to New Jersey, thumb your nose at it, hope they never find you. If they find you, you say, well, whoa, I haven't, nobody's determined I have a duty to register here. I mean, you're finally going to admit something's funny.
This might actually qualify as funny. And so you can move there and they can't determine what you're similar to is because they don't know you're there. And they just said, yeah, I guess that's what it is. I like the part, though, where they said indicting defendants before affording them the opportunity to challenge whether their out-of-state conviction is similar to a New Jersey Megan's Law crime offends principles of due process and the statute itself. As with any crime, the state retains the burden to develop cause for indictment for failing to register under New Jersey, prior to filing charges.
Well, I mean, it's a good reasoned decision based on the law as the law currently exists. The law is not going to exist like this for very long.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Because I can tell you right now, the prosecution industrial complex has ran as fast as they could make their way to the legislators, and they've said, we've got a big floodgate problem facing us, and they're going to change several aspects of the law. They're going to change it to where that if you don't present yourself, then you don't get any due process. They're going to try to change it. I don't know if they'll succeed. And they're going to try to put the catch-all provision in that's not in the law currently. The similar to will be watered down or eliminated. That's what's likely to happen as a result of this decision.
Should we buy stock in U-Haul yet or no?
I wouldn't spend a lot of money getting ready to go to New Jersey because I think they're going to close this loophole fairly quickly.
So the one thing that this kind of begs the question of is there not some kind of, I mean, how would they don't hire any kind of like investigators, PIs, whatever, like, hey, this person has absconded. Do they just wait till you get pulled over by law enforcement for speeding, taillight out, whatever, before you show up on their radar? There's no proactive go try to track you down.
Well, those are good questions. And theoretically, the answer is yes, they do try to track you down. Theoretically, both states of the state of South Carolina and New York were supposed to notify the federal marshals that these people had absconded. And the federal marshals were supposed to be looking. Now, it could be that the federal marshals helped find them. Who knows? It was not clear in the decision. But theoretically, there would have been a federal warrant issued. The state of South Carolina and New York should have issued a warrant. South Carolina did. It didn't say that New York did. But theoretically, both states should have issued a warrant. But New York has this peculiar system where you don't have to report in very frequently. So he may have not been gone for the 3 years or so that you have to go between coming in person.
I see. So he could have registered and then skipped town the next day, so to speak, and maybe he didn't have to register for like 3 years or something like that if you're a low tier?
Yes, that could be a possibility in New York, but South Carolina, they had an active warrant, which begs the question, how come the feds weren't looking or were they looking, and did they assist in apprehending this individual from South Carolina? Because his offense pattern couldn't read on the family program, but it was pretty graphic.
Because, I mean, Larry, look, honestly, I try as hard as I can within reason to reduce my digital footprint so that I'm not pinging every sensor out there. But all you do is run one credit card and poof, they know where you are. Like, I mean, it's not hard for them to figure out where you are if you are you, right? You are a person, as you always say.
That is correct. In this age we live in, you would have to do something that's almost impossible.
It's really freaking hard.
I mean, you could convert to cash, but that would be a problem. If you convert to cash, you still don't get rid of the photo recognition that every retailer is running these days. And of course, I don't know who they integrate that data with. I don't know when you go to your grocery store, when you scan your card, and they're at the Walmart or Kroger or wherever, when they're capturing all these images of you. I don't know what they're doing with them, how long they're saving them, who they're sharing them with.
I was just thinking on the other side of that, with where do you work? That means you're working under the table, so somebody's paying you cash. You have to go get green dots or whatever so you can move money around in any form or fashion, or some way that you're paying a check cashing place to cash your check if they're doing that way. And you're like, it's expensive and really freaking hard to do to stay completely off the radar.
It would be virtually impossible in this modern age.
Agreed.
You would have to be able to live in the boonies, off grid, and not need to go into town and not need to conduct business. You'd have to be able to pretty much live off the land, and very few people could do that.
Absolutely. And that means no electricity or solar. It means well water. Like, this would be, to me, it would be really hard. Tell me I'm wrong in comments on YouTube, wherever, email, whatever. I don't think that it's possible. There's a Wired article, Wired magazine, maybe from 2012 or something like this. I read it while I was locked up. And someone tried and like put out a request to all the hackers and trackers, whatever, out there to see if they could figure out where the person was. And so the person that was trying to do the hiding did everything they possibly could. And in like 20 hours, they figured out where they were.
That would be my expectation. It would be virtually impossible to do that. But why would you have to, if you have solar, why would that reveal where you are if you have solar? Wouldn't that put you off grid?
Oh, I'm totally agreeing. No, I'm saying, like, if you have the solar panels on top of your little shack, whatever, that you at least have some level of electricity, whatever. But, like, what are you going to do with the electricity? Oh, I'm going to turn on the computer and go on the internet. No, that's going to reveal you in an instant. So you've got your little light turned on, but how are you going to, like, you're going to go just get firewood? You're going to live like Little House on the Prairie? This is insanity.
So, well, I'm sure in our vast audience, there's somebody living off grid that'll explain it, how it's done, and that they're on the run. And we'll give you a microphone. You can tell the audience.
Well, if they're living that far off grid, they're not listening to us.
Oh, I bet they are. They're listening to us on satellite.
I see. Okay. All right, then. Do you have anything else to cover before we head out of here?
No, but I'm hoping we have a great episode next week. I'm trying to get a special guest to explain about one of Narsal's recent lawsuit filings. And if that person's available, that's what we're going to try to do next episode.
This wouldn't be a person that was a guest on the program already from a few months ago, is it?
I don't think so. The Narsal paralegals who I'm inviting.
Yes, he was on the program when we were at the conference.
Oh, okay. I wasn't there. All right.
Yes. Well, all right, then. We'll head over to registrymatters.co for show notes and links everywhere you need to go. You should also head over to fypeducation.org. Email us at registrymatterscast@gmail.com. Old-fashioned voicemail at 747-227-4477. And please support the program. It takes a lot of work for us to do this every week. Hours and hours and hours and hours and hours every week. Patreon.com/registrymatters. Also, if you want to buy any merch, we got cool merch, sweatshirts and so forth, and that can be done over at fypeducation.org/shop. That's all I got, man. You good? Well,
I'm good. And you said that hours and hours with a little bit of sarcasm, but there are a lot of hours goes into this, believe it or not.
I do say it kind of tongue in cheek, but it is many, 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 many hours every week for us to do this.
Oh, yes.
So any support is greatly appreciated.
I don't turn this over to AI. I sit down and read these things and try to figure out what we're going to talk about.
I don't know how you would do that one, but okay.
So
I appreciate it.
You don't know how I sit down and read them? I sit down and read them. That's how I do it.
No, but then not use AI to finish thoughts and whatnot.
So.
All right. Well, have a great night. Have a good weekend, Larry. Hope everything goes good for you with this, all your stuff this weekend.
Let's hope so. Good night.
Bye.
You've been listening to FYP.